Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast, and today we're talking about the news that Liverpool are reportedly on the verge of appointing Ruben Amorim as Jurgen Klopp's successor at Anfield. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And joining me, it's our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. I'm okay. What did you call him?
Ruben Amorim,
mate. If he's coming to English football, he's Ruben Amorim. That'll be the last time we hear that nonsense.
Okay, I mean, can we get the Amorim right at the very least?
Like, it's Amorim, like, is it? It won't be that, though, will it? It will be Ruben Amorim. That's what everyone will call him.
Well, I won't.
So I'm sorry to you, to anyone who's Portuguese, to Amorim's family. I mean, in Liverpool, how do you pronounce it? Are you good at a Scouse accent?
No,
you're not going to try that one.
I don't think I'm going to try that one. We're trying to bring some new people in. We're hoping that new people are listening to this, some Liverpool fans who might not have listened to the podcast before. I'm not going to exclude them before we.
No, we're trying to get you to include them. I'm trying to get you to explain how they would say his name.
I think they can work that bit out for themselves.
I think they would get it actually far better than I would, is what I was actually trying to
also,
get.
Also, people that are very respectful, I think, of names generally. I think as you go, people tend to buy in a little bit more to pronunciation. So we'll see. But we're going to get into it. In part two, we're going to be discussing some questions Amorim has to answer if he is going to take the Liverpool job, and some strengths of his that might translate very well to Merseyside. But before we get into all of that, I think it's probably a nice time to just kind of assess the situation. You obviously have various contacts in the footballing world and a lot of people reporting different things on this. So I thought it'd be good to just get a kind of state of the nation on exactly where we are with Liverpool's pursuit of Amorim. Is he very much the top target at this point for FSG and the person that they see as Klopp's successor now that Xabi Alonso has ruled himself out of the chat?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I always had Alonso in the front seat to get this job. But once he ruled himself out, they have zoned in on this appointment. And you can see in the way that this has been reported over the last week or so that there's a genuine push here to try to get him as the next Liverpool manager. And I think whenever there's a big story like this, you obviously look for and try to consider who are you going to be your top sources? Who's going to be the guy that I can totally trust on this? And I think from what we've seen so far, Paul Joyce is obviously very strong at the moment. He's always a top Liverpool reporter, but at the moment it seems particularly strong. David Ornstein, never far off the mark. But there's a new guy in town, and there's the Portuguese Romano has arrived on the scene in the shape of Pedro Sepulveda. I presume I've pronounced his name wrong. But Pedro has really been setting the pace for how this story has gone. And a lot of people are following his lead, really, and trying to discover just how far or how close this appointment actually is. This morning, we were reporting this on Tuesday, it was reported quite widely that they were reaching a verbal agreement with Liverpool over a three-year contract for him to be Jurgen Klopp's successor. Now, Liverpool played it down. Other sources played it down, including Pedro Sepulveda, who says it's completely false that Ruben Amorim was interviewed or had any direct contact with Liverpool. The Portuguese is focused on winning titles at Sporting, and all negotiations go through his agent. And to date, there is no agreement on the terms of the contract. Negotiations proceed. Now, I can only guess, I don't know this guy, but he's clearly switched on to this deal. And I seem to remember he was before too. It might have been Darwin Nunez or something like that, where he's been into very switched on to the information too. you know, it would make sense that he, if he's not getting his information directly from Sporting, that he's in the right camp to get the information at the right times. But, you know, throughout this storyline, he's been pretty clear that Amorim was the guy being primed for this job. Obviously, Sporting had two big games last week, both against Benfica.
Yeah.
And I was always told, like, this week's going to be a tough one because you can't really progress things very far at this stage with the man himself, because these are massive fixtures to the club and to him personally. But obviously, in the background, you can have discussions with representatives, and that seems to be the route they've gone down so far. So I wouldn't be surprised if this dragged out a little while longer, but I do believe this is progressing and that he is the number one candidate. 4 years in charge at Sporting, two League Cups to his name so far. And yeah, he's setting out now to win
the league title. Let's not forget the league title.
Give me a chance to finish. He's about to claim hopefully his second league title, as Sporting sit 4 points clear of Benfica with a game in hand. And yeah, he's already got one title in the bag and he looks like he's about to claim a second. Tactically strong, but apparently has a very, very strong personality as well. And I think that that seems to be a real defining trait of his in terms of being a top target for Liverpool. And that is equally important. If you think about Jurgen Klopp, it's not just how good he is tactically. It's about the connections he's made, not just with the football club, but with the area. And it's about his management of the media, his attachment to the fans, not just in Liverpool, but across England and beyond that globally. And that's what's important when you're getting a manager that's going to be right for your club. When you're a club of this size, you're hoping that they can build something special. Look at Chelsea right now, right? They've got Mauricio Pochettino. Nobody thought that was a bad appointment at the time of him going in there. And you look at it, and not only is he struggling with results, but he has not built any rapport with the fan base. And those two things, rubbing against each other the wrong way, usually ends in disaster. So Liverpool not need to just get one of these things right, they need both.
Yeah, it does feel like this. I mean, the kind of psychological element and the connection with the area, I think, is something that you kind of pull in here. And it was something that we could have discussed in part two, but I think it makes sense to kind of look at it now. In terms of, there is that sense of personality needed, especially to follow someone as iconic as Jurgen Klopp, right? And I mean, the question that I'm not going to go into in part two, rather than, you know, look at the actual things that are on pitch or player related or what happens, is how do you replace a legend, right? And I think that we've seen at Manchester United in particular that that is very much not easy. It's been five coaches, I think, since Sir Alex Ferguson left. They have struggled to build that rapport with really any of them. It looks likely that there will be a sixth coming in to that job to kind of fix that and try and build that again. We saw Unai Emery, who is doing a brilliant job at Aston Villa right now, has European pedigree, has been excellent almost everywhere he's gone, to be perfectly honest with you. Struggled to get people on board with his vision at Arsenal after he replaced Arsene Wenger. It is really not easy to replace a living legend. And I think that Amorim's ability and that kind of sense that, you know, he was a bit of a warrior on the pitch as a player. He wasn't the most technically gifted footballer in the world. He played with some exceptional teams, the Benfica side that got to the UEFA Cup at the time final and ended up losing. But, well, they always end up losing finals. That's the curse that surrounds Benfica in Europe. But the way that he played and the fact that he was included in Portuguese national squads for various World Cups and European Championships when he wasn't the most gifted player of that crop, that was about his personality and what he brought to the table. And I think that stepping into the shoes of Jurgen Klopp, we spoke about it with Alonso, having that kind of rapport already with the Liverpool fans. Amorim doesn't have that, but he does have a personality that I think is able to step up into this kind of situation and people will get behind almost immediately at Liverpool.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's and that is what's going to be important here. With Alonso, one of the prime reasons I thought, you know, this is a no-lose situation is because not only was there already an attachment to him, But you could see what he was doing with Leverkusen this season, and nobody could have any qualms with you going appointing that guy. And I guess second best, yeah, Amorim doesn't yet have that emotional attachment to the fan base, but he's got the other side of it in terms of being a winner. He's got the growth to become even better, got the mindset that shows he can do it. It sounds like he might have the personality to take it to the next step too.
Yeah, definitely. And easy to forget that he's still not even 40, which is wild for someone who's had this much experience now playing and managing at this kind of level. So
it's pretty wild, yeah.
A lot of growth to come as well, which is a cool thing. And I mean, look, you look at Liverpool and this dynasty that Klopp has kind of overseen, you'd expect that Liverpool will be looking to put in someone that can do another job for a number of years. This isn't a short-term quick fix. They want to be able to build on the platform that Klopp leaves behind. Putting in someone like Amorim, who has the potential to go on and be, I think, one of Europe's best managers, if not the best managers in the world, I think is a very, very interesting step. And I like this from Liverpool. But we'll discuss why in more depth in part two. We'll be back to talk about the questions that it will face in the dugout at Anfield and some of the strengths that suit this Liverpool team. Don't go anywhere.
Welcome back to the Ruben Amorim Show on Ranks FC. I still got his name wrong, but I'll try and get better. Once he's announced as the Liverpool manager, I promise I'm going to work on the pronunciation of his name. I will not disrespect him any longer. One man who certainly is not going to disrespect him even for 1 second is the mighty Jack Collins. Who knows, I reckon, more about this man than most people in this country, because you, Van, and I on Portuguese football for a long time, but Sporting particularly you like to watch. And I think you know better than most what will be coming here. So we're going to throw it over. It's another Jack Collins ranking, and you're going to be throwing up the pros and the cons of what we'll expect from Amorim.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's cons. I think it's that there are a couple of things that remain questions ahead of this appointment. And I think for the purposes of this, we're going to suggest that Amorim is going to become the next Liverpool manager. So I think three questions, we'll do it in two parts, three questions to answer and three strengths that might translate to this Liverpool squad and how they like to play. But I think the questions come first because it makes more sense. And at three, the main question is sort of, will it translate? And I think this comes in a couple of parts. So Amorim is a master communicator, right? He's got a postgraduate degree in psychomotor education, which is basically a course which is supposed to help influence personal development of individuals in the context of a group environment, which feels pretty perfect, right, for a football club that feels that you can empower individuals in order to move the whole forward. And it's worked, right, because he's completely and utterly flipped the atmosphere around Sporting on its head. And it's important to understand kind of where Sporting were when he arrived in March 2020. It was a club in absolute turmoil. We had ultras invading the training ground and fighting with players. We had a president at war with his own fans. It was a lack of a league title for 18 years since 2002 and falling behind Portugal's other two major clubs, Porto and Benfica, in a big, big way. Sporting had chewed up and spat out four coaches in the 2 years before Amorim arrived, and the Alvalade was beginning to look a bit like a managerial graveyard. And look, there were questions too about Amorim and the fee that Sporting paid Braga for a 35-year-old head coach who had less than a year's senior experience in the top flight. 4 years on, that 10 million euros that they paid looks like one of the best fees that any club, I think, has ever paid for a manager. And it's interesting, you look back at the first press conference, it's pretty much 4 years and a couple of days now since he came in to this Sporting job. And it was question after question, is this job too big for you? Your Benfica past, all of this. And Amorim sort of smiled and he said, what if it goes right? What if it goes right? And it has, I think. This is what was really interesting to see. You spoke about what he's won, but also Sporting have become financially stable over this period. A lot of that has been selling big players, but haven't dropped off hugely when they've done so. They've brought through new talents. Amorim has made those players better. That coaching and that kind of ability to improve players tactically, but also to give them the confidence and the sense that of worth, I suppose, to actually go out and perform week in, week out in a, you know, an environment that expects success. It's a lot. But the question then becomes, Amorim has built his reputation on getting a tune out of a group of players in his native Portuguese tongue, right? Not only is he working here in his homeland, but in his city of birth too. He is fundamentally Lisboeta and Lisboanense. Now, Amorim's grasp of English is excellent. He's fluent, he did his coaching badges in Belfast, and he's shown in numerous press conferences that he speaks the language perfectly. He's able to adapt to different accents in press rooms. He, you know, is funny when he speaks in English. He's able to, you know, poise interesting and good answers, but also questions back to people. So the question isn't whether he speaks the language. It's more whether that ability, I think, to transcend a coaching role and get the best out of his squad in that communicatory role works quite as well in a language other than his native tongue. Now, I'm inclined to think that it's probably not going to be an issue. It wasn't for Klopp, after all, but I think it's something worth pointing out that perhaps I might not worry about quite as much with a manager who wasn't so brilliant in this particular area. And so we're questioning something him on something that he's brilliant at, but I think it's such a crucial part of his managerial whole, if you will, and that kind of sense around all of it as a cohesive unit, that his ability to bring the best out of players is something that has elevated Sporting to this level. Will he be able to do that quite as well in a language that's not necessarily his own?
Yeah, so I can't remember exactly what Klopp had in the bag in terms of communication skills when he first came, but I don't remember it being a problem. So that's probably going to be something to overcome, but you'd imagine he'll be fine. What would you have next, mate, if you were to be looking at questions that he's got to answer?
Yeah, I mean, this is the biggest question, I think. Is it two? Because I don't think part three makes sense without it, but it becomes, does he stick with this 3-4-3? And because Amorim's 3-4-3 has been his bread and butter whilst he's been at Sporting for the entire time, it's worth pointing out that it's not always looked the same. We've seen a whole load of variations in how the forward line in particular has worked in this time, but the basic shape hasn't altered very much since he took the job in 2020. And when we talked about Xabi Alonso potentially taking this job a few weeks ago, I said that I thought Alonso would adapt to the surroundings he was in. A three at the back system that Alonso plays wasn't a guaranteed thing he would bring if he came to Anfield. But I think with Amorim, that it's far more likely that we're going to see this 3-4-3 system if he does end up on Merseyside. And I talked a bit about Amorim's system a couple of weeks ago when we discussed the upcoming managers who might get a bigger job this summer episode. But it's a really smart system, right? Three centre-backs, two of which are expected to cover the wide ground and move out wide, especially in possession, in order to increase the distance that the attacking side have to press from. Two wing-backs who get high up the pitch with an emphasis on providing width and creativity to this team. A central pivot, two midfielders who tend to sit a bit deeper and look to shield the defence whilst firing vertical passes forward. And two inside forwards who play off a physical number nine, right? There are certain players, I think, that don't have an obvious position within this in the Liverpool squad. Curtis Jones jumps out at me. And I don't think that a front three of Salah, Darwin and Diaz necessarily works within it either. But I can see a lot of this squad at Liverpool fitting into the mould quite nicely. It's just going to be interesting to see if there's any backlash, I suppose, if Amorim was to bring this 3-4-3 system to Liverpool, considering that they are so used at this point to playing under Klopp's 4-3-3.
Yeah, you would also wonder about the depth of the squad and the areas that they'd need to bulk out if he was to introduce that. I mean, straight away, you're going to be like, well, they need another centre-back, don't they? If you're going to be
That's question one.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be highlighted again immediately. I mean, you think of who they're linked with and stuff. Inacio is somebody they've had on their radar for a while. Maybe you can follow him. But then you look at the fullback and like the type of wingback they might want. Obviously, they do have players that can play there, but Ait Nouri from Wolves has been linked recently. Potentially a fit for that sort of system if they were to go down there. And if you say that a front three of Salah, Darwin, Diaz doesn't necessarily work, well, there is a chance that Salah leaves anyway. and one of the names touted might be somebody like Nico Williams, where they would reinvest, but I don't know that he necessarily fits. But, you know, this is the type of question that will be raised.
Yeah, I mean, look, it takes us on nicely because my last question was who comes in defensively. And look, it's less important than the second one, but it's in here because it didn't make any sense to discuss it before we talked about how they were going to set up.
Yeah.
If he does stick with that 3-4-3, Liverpool going to need depth at the back. Jarrod Quansah's emergence helps, as does the versatility of Mr. Reliable Joe Gomez, who I actually think would fit really nicely into Amorim's wide right centre-back role for what it's worth. But with Joel Matip leaving in the summer and Ibrahima Konate's injury record, I think that Liverpool need definitely one and potentially two more centre-backs if they're going to play this system with a three. I've seen a fair few people suggesting that Van Dijk will definitely play the heart of it, but my gut feeling is that that probably doesn't get the best out of him in Amorim's system, given the central player is often expected to maraud into midfield if teams do work the ball through Amorim's kind of front press. Konate, I think, might be the best man for that job, whilst Van Dijk's ball-switching ability might fit that left centre-back role perfectly. Amorim loves big switches from his outside centre-backs to find his wide players in space. And we've seen that so many times from Van Dijk looking for either his full-backs or his wingers. Now, Van Dijk has played quite a lot as a left centre-back for three in his country, and I think that's where he'd fit into the system for Amorim. It means you'd be looking to ideally bring in, I think, a player who can play in both the central and right centre-back roles. And it's interesting you mentioned Inacio is not the player I'd follow. I'd go to Ousmane Diamande, the 20-year-old Ivorian. Now, it's obviously a little bit lazy to suggest a manager will go back to their old club straight away and bring players with them. But in terms of fulfilling a need within a system and in terms of bringing in a player with high potential and a long-term future at the top of the game, this one makes loads of sense as far as I'm concerned. There's also been a bit of talk that Ronald Araujo might leave Barcelona as one of their sellable assets this summer. If that's true, Liverpool should 100% be looking at that. Whilst Ilya Zabani at Bournemouth is also, I think, worth a look. Good season acclimatizing to the Premier League. He hasn't played in a three in the system at Bournemouth, but I think he possesses all of the qualities to play in that kind of right centre-back role and at a push in the central role in an Amorim system. So a couple just of suggestions, but I think the important part is looking at someone, if you're only going to bring in one, who can cover that right centre-back and centre-back roles, both of them. And if you're looking at two, then you can spread that around a little bit more, but just a couple of ideas.
One thing we do often see when a manager comes in is that they do bring somebody with them from their old team. And it's not
the Sarri Jorginho mold.
Yeah, and it's because you kind of want to have somebody in the dressing room who's not you talking to players about the style of play and what might be expected. And I think that that does have importance quite a lot of the time. Do you think that that will be needed? Do you think his style of play is easy to adapt to? What would be your hunch on a sporting player actually following him?
I don't think it's absolutely necessary. Bear in mind that Liverpool have a lot of very, you know, intelligent footballers in various roles. And one of Amorim's big strengths, I think, is that he doesn't overcomplicate things. He is, you know, a very, very good manager at being able to explain things in short, kind of sharp bursts, making things simple for the players on the pitch and allowing them to just fulfill their roles and then get on with the game. And it's something that various ex-players who played underneath him have spoken about as a real skill. But also, I think that the system itself, it isn't always that complicated. And that's not to say that there are lots of incredibly complicated systems. There are lots of formations and setups that are relatively simple in their execution. But I think in terms of what players are expected to do and where they're supposed to be, it feels like a system that just naturally comes to players. And the fact that Sporting have had such a high turnover of players, we've spoken before about the fact that Polina left, Pedro Porro left, Mateus Nunes left, who else? Nuno Mendes left. Lots of players here who have been part or key part of the system and have gone away, and they've been able to be replaced well in terms of the execution of transfers, which is a good sign, but also the players who've come in have been able to step up and make it work. So I don't think it's necessarily he has to bring someone with him in order to make this work. I just think that Diamande in particular is a really good fit for the gap that Liverpool have if they were to go to this three at the back system. And that's why, I mean, obviously Arsenal are incredibly interested in Diamande. and someone that they've been looking at for a while, and there's interest from Chelsea as well, that report continues to gather pace. I wonder if Amorim going to Liverpool maybe changes the angle of attack on that one a little bit.
Yeah, true. Another player that I want to bring up before you move on is, well, when you look at that Sporting squad, I mean, the thing that actually is really interesting about the fact that if he is to leave, that he actually leaves, is always who ends up following him. But I think in this instance, I'm not even necessarily talking about just to follow him into Liverpool. I'm talking about the potential for quite a few of those players to then go on and make moves, possibly to the Premier League, but also to other teams. And you just go through that squad. I mean, I've talked to you about it recently, ahead actually of the Sporting Benfica game. Like, there was been loads and loads of scouts at those two fixtures, because they had across the two teams like 10, 12 targets that were like genuinely being looked at. Now, obviously, players like Jokeres are going to be difficult because he's got €100 million release clause, and as good as he's been, I'm not sure anyone's going to go there. But what about someone like Hjulmand? Because actually, like, Liverpool's midfield setup, it's good. Is it complete? What if Man United want Hjulmand? Could Liverpool go for him? Would he fit them? That's one player that I think will have a lot of teams after him. I'm just wondering whether Liverpool would suit him or not.
Yeah, I mean, well, it depends how he's going to set up, right? He might end up shocking us all by switching out of this. And he is intelligent and empathetic about the way that the squads look. Yes, he has his preferred ideals in terms of how, you know, to play out and how he wants to set teams up. But equally, I think he's smart enough to know that if it's not working, he's going to have to adapt. I do think, and actually it's quite a nice place to take this on into kind of strengths, because one of the things I kind of thought for a strength of how he fits is actually this midfield balance. And one of the major consistent things that's defined Amorim's time in Lisbon is the fact that Pedro Gonçalves, also known as Pot or Poch, depending on whereabouts you're from in the country, has featured in this side, right? Well, and what's interesting about that is that his position hasn't been consistent. He started off playing in the forward line, despite being signed from Famalicão as a central midfielder, but his role has been extremely hybrid. He sometimes plays in the center of the park, usually against teams where Sporting have a little bit, you know, more comfort in their ball dominance, and sometimes as one of the inside forwards, but he's expected to drop back in, not only to help with the press, but also in build-up. And I think it's a role almost built to perfection for the likes of Dominic Szoboszlai or Harvey Elliott, who kind of straddle that balance between being attackers and midfielders. The two-man pivot seems perfectly cut out for Endo and Alexis, although bringing in cover for Endo, who isn't getting any younger, feels like an important priority for Liverpool as well. And that's maybe where Hjulmand comes into the conversation. Look, perhaps Bajcetic could play that role. I think he could. Remember him exclaiming after a Merseyside derby about how much he just loved tackling. I mean, Amorim's going to absolutely love that. Mm. But, you know, whether that means that they have to look for someone immediately, or they can actually be like, okay, where do we need to prioritize? Is Endo and Bajcetic enough to get through a first season in that position? Probably is, yeah. But yeah, if they're looking for someone who has the potential to go on and be, you know, a superstar in that position, then Hjulmand has been brilliant. And we spoke about him on Monday's post box very briefly about the fact that Manchester United were interested in Morten Hjulmand. He's obviously spent a year at Sporting. He joined from Lecce last summer. He's been phenomenal. One of the best players, I think, in the league, and has really kind of made that jump seamlessly to playing from a team who were battling in the sort of lower half of Serie A to battling into a team that are looking for a league title. He's been brilliant. I really, really like Hjulmand, and I think he can go further in terms of his steps up the pyramid in terms of where he's playing. United should be interested in him, but at the moment, he'd be playing in the Champions League for Sporting next year. He won't be playing in the Champions League for Manchester United. So there are question marks around that as well. But I think that he has the capacity, the engine, and the physicality to play almost wherever he wants. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's someone that not necessarily follows him, as you say, but also heads for the exit door as an era comes to an end at Sporting. This is a massive period for them as well. If he does leave, how do you replace? You know, in the same way that Liverpool are wondering how you replace someone from Klopp's dynasty, how Sporting replaced someone who has turned the club around and put them back on level footing with the other teams in Portugal, the other big teams in Portugal, is a massive ask as well. And that's going to be an intriguing one for anyone. But yeah, I'm not completely sold that they'd need a Hjulmand, although I think he's good enough to play for a Liverpool side. But yeah, the verticality of the way that Amorim likes his midfield to play should suit this current crop. Make use of Alexis's excellent passing range from a slightly deeper position. And whilst one of Elliot and Szoboszlai might end up being that third man normally in an inside forward role, being asked to drop in and be the link man in the way that Gonçalves does for this current Sporting side, I think it's really interesting. And it goes back to, you know, when we're talking about questions, what I was saying, well, I'm not sure that Darwin, Diaz and Salah can all start together. That's because I think that that third player in the front three almost wants to be a hybrid player in order to drop back in and make that link up work.
Mm. Very good. Right. It's time to hype him up. Why are Amorim's strength so strong that Liverpool are not going to fall off here, not going to drop off after Klopp? Why are they going to stay on top of the pile? Why do they want this guy so much?
Well, let's talk about Darwin, because Darwin Nunez up top is a good thing for an Amorim side, I think. There's been a lot of press coverage of Victor Gyökeres' productivity for Sporting this season, and rightly so. The Swede has bagged 36 goals, provided 15 assists in 42 games, making him one of the most lethal strikers on the continent. But what Amorim has asked Gyökeres to do might just be a perfect fit for Darwin, who obviously Amorim would be well aware of from his time at Benfica. Gyökeres is an incredibly willing channel runner. And this is something that goes overlooked, I think, when people just look at, oh, he scored a lot of goals, I've seen the highlights. He works so hard to stretch defences, to pull them out of position, to get in behind, to create opportunities. And I think that it's something that Amorim could replicate quite comfortably with Darwin. His aerial dominance as well, Gyökeres, is pretty key. And we've seen Darwin thrive in that area this season. He's powerful and he's physical. And I think that Amorim would be able to play to Darwin's strengths in the same way that he has with Gyökeres, where he has turned him from a good striker who people were excited about into one of the most feared in Europe. There's a slight question of how the close control and dribbling and link up with the inside forwards would work in the same way that it has at Sporting at the moment. But I think that Darwin's explosivity and dynamism combined with his physical profile feels like a really good fit for Amorim. And so one of these big strengths is I think that Darwin could explode next season.
Yeah, that's interesting. I jotted down a few names that I thought could be really key. And I mean, they are obvious names, but the three names I jotted down, the first one was Nunes, the second was Alisson, and the third was Diogo Jota. So yeah, you've gone straight to the top of the pile with that one, mate. No surprises at all. And good news for the evolution of Darwin, which seems ever continuing. What's second up, mate?
Role of the wingbacks. I mean, it's kind of in the name, but Amorim's wingbacks provide almost all the width in this Sporting side. So you think back to Liverpool in that famous season where Robertson and Trent broke assist record after assist record. And it's quite easy to think about what they could do if they were being asked to get into dangerous areas and make those things happen once again. It's also probably worth noting at this point that when Amorim's teams play against sides who are sitting deeper and do kind of back off them a little bit, the volume of crossing goes up in a massive way and is almost all from the players in those wing-back positions. So whilst the emergence of Conor Bradley has been brilliant, and he actually did play in a more advanced wing-back role when he was on loan at Bolton and for his country at times, I mean, he played as a winger against Scotland recently and scored, I've got a feeling that this is a role, especially on the right, with an extra centre-back behind him that might suit Trent down to the ground, take away some of those defensive responsibilities and get him back to his creative best. The teams are sitting in deep. It's just Trent bullet after bullet being fired in from that right-hand side. The players being expected to attack it. Yes, Darwin with that physicality in the box. Also, one or two times of the players who play in those pivot positions expected to get forward and into these areas if they are dominant. And the likes of these inside forwards arriving in the box as well. I think it could see Trent re-explode if he was to be used in this kind of manner. But also, I think could continue to get the best out of Conor Bradley as they rotate in those systems. It's interesting that you mentioned Ait Nouri, because you'd probably say that if Liverpool were going to make a change in that area, maybe it is, you know, Tsimikas has had a good run here and I like him a lot, But equally, it feels like they could probably do with someone who is able to explode a little bit more in those areas. Aitnori could be a really good option there as well.
Trent unlocked. That is what we all want to see. That's the dream. Come on, let's see more of it. Okay, mate, what's the final point here?
Well, we talked about Klopp's kids a lot this year, right? And this crop of youngsters that have the potential to be part of this next Liverpool. You know, it won't be Liverpool 2.0. We're talking about Liverpool 2.0 this year, but who have the potential to be part of this next Liverpool era that will go on without Klopp. And I think Amorim's ability to bring through youngsters has got to be something that Liverpool are bringing into major consideration here, right? We talked about Pedro Gonçalves Potts, signed as a central midfielder and went on to explode into one of the most creative forces in Portuguese football. João Palhinha was out on loan at Braga when Amorim came in, brought back in and made into one of Europe's central defensive midfielders or leading central defensive midfielders. Pedro Porro knocked off the City Academy and that potential was always there, but it felt like there was a sense that it wasn't quite clicking. 2 years later, 3 years later, he's tearing it up for Tottenham in the Premier League, one of the best right backs in the division. Nuno Mendes brought through as an 18-year-old, sold off to PSG, one of the best left backs in the world. Mateus Nunes, Manuel Ugarte, PSG, Manchester City, Gonçalo Inácio, Ousmane Diamande, Bragança. There are so many brilliant players that have been improved and allowed to flourish and shine by Amorim in this Sporting side. And with this crop coming through from the Liverpool Academy, who we've seen already be given these opportunities and take them with both hands on these stages, and not only the ones that we've seen this season, but you think about someone like Fabio Carvalho, who has gone out on loan to Leipzig, it didn't work, gone out to Hull now, doing a really good job, having a good time in the Championship, starting to show the potential that made Liverpool sign him in the first place. There is already talk that if Amorim comes in, he wants Fabio Carvalho to be part of the squad, right? And I think that we're at this point now where we're seeing players here who have the potential to be world beaters. They need a manager who's going to put his faith in them. And I think that Amorim is that man. And I think that's one of the main reasons that Liverpool fans could be really excited about this. He is not someone who is going to completely and utterly be like, nope, I need to bring in loads of players. I need to bring in a complete new set that's going to push all these youngsters back down the pecking order. I think he is a manager who is going to give opportunities and chances to a very talented crop coming through. And that's got to be something that excites you, I think, as a Liverpool fan.
Mate, did you just say that he's going to sign João Palhinha? Am I interpreting this wrong? If he improves João Palhinha, are Liverpool coming knocking? I'm scared. I'm scared by what you just said.
Well, I mean, obviously there's a link, but I'm just mean in terms of the way that he brought him through. Look, he went on to be brilliant. I don't know if Liverpool would spend that money on a 29-year-old. It's not really the FSG model. And I think that that's probably the thing that stops that happening. But I mean, the way that he has improved all these players, I think is truly quite remarkable. And given the kind of depth below in terms of Liverpool's academy and the players coming through, it's a reason to be incredibly excited, I think, for Liverpool fans.
So it sounds like if Amorim does get this job, Liverpool fans can fear not, because they have a new king coming to town, and it sounds like it'll be quite fun for everybody else to watch as well. Thanks, Jack. That was a lot of fun. I'm not sure it's quite as fun as what we're about to do in the third segment, even though it's going to be a bit weird. I'll see you after the break.
Welcome back to Ranks FC, where it's time for part three and a little bit of guru wisdom.
Guru wisdom, guru wisdom, guru wisdom.
Thank you, boys. Dean, what are we doing in part three?
Well, I thought, you know, we've had a lovely episode here. We've learned a lot about Amorim, and maybe we should celebrate him. And I was thinking, yeah, what Liverpool fans going to, how are they going to embrace him? You know, this club is great at coming up with unique chants and songs. And I thought, well, maybe we should just give it a bash. Maybe we should be like, well, how can we set the tone for what's to come? And I'm not saying that whatever we come up with today will be replicated on the terraces of Anfield, because it absolutely won't. But I thought,
AI got one for Alexis McAllister. So if AI could get one, let's write one up ourselves.
Okay. Well, first things first, I was like, well, I'm a bit stuck because I can't think of anything that actually rhymes with amorim, apart from amore. And the meaning of amore is love in Italian. Am I right saying Italian?
Yep.
Yeah, Italian. So I was like, okay, that works nice. There's a Dean Martin song called That's Amore. So we can call that That's Amorim. How do you pronounce his name? Amorim.
Amorim.
Amorim. So roll the tape for a second, Jack, just so everybody knows the tune that I'm talking about.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
Okay, so there we go. You get the idea, people. This is where we're heading in our new world of Ruben Amorim. And when I say that these are very raw notes, this is like, this is not like Oasis quickly jotting out a song in 10 minutes. This is me jotting out the first song of my life, and it's not going to be that good. But I think it's actually all right. So listen to this that I've just jotted along while you've been chatting along today. So, when your new coach comes in and your team needs to win, that's amorim. When his team makes you drool, he looks so effing cool, it's amorim. When you walk in a dream and he makes Anfield scream, it's amorim.
That's not bad at all. That's not bad at all. I've got to say, that's not too bad.
It's all right, isn't it? Goes. I'm not saying it can't be better, because it can. And there's also a verse that I missed out which goes a bit all over the place, and I didn't have time to think that through. But as a rough sketch of what we could hear from Anfield, I think it's all right.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. That's very good. I was expecting less.
Well, yeah, that's good.
I was expecting less. So, I mean, it's a good one. We're talking of classics. I thought maybe Copacabana by Barry Manilow would work.
Oh, okay.
Be like, his name is Ruben. He came from Lisbon to follow on from Klopp and bring trophies to the cop.
Is that as far as you got?
That's as far as I got.
It's a great start.
There you go, Liverpool fans. If you're looking for some inspiration to write your new ditty, if you will.
There'll be loads. Rank squad, Liverpool fans, combine and put together the rest of those songs. And we might have a new niche here, mate, in the podcast market. But you've done this with Fulhamish before, haven't you? And I actually loved it when
this will catch on with Fulhamish. Yeah,
this will catch on. And some of them did. Some of them have been heard.
Yeah, there's the odd one or two.
Yeah, and even the ones that haven't made it onto the terraces have provided me with a lot of laughs along the way. So, this is our first attempt at this will catch on. And even if it doesn't catch on, that was quite funny, wasn't it?
I enjoyed myself immensely. And with that, I think it's probably time for us to call it a day. So all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much, Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate. And well done to you for a brilliant show.
Thank you very much. I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. Thank you so much for listening to this episode focused on Liverpool and Ruben Amorim, who looks like he might well be the next coach on the scene at Anfield. We'll be back after the Champions League with Champions League takeaway, looking at all four of those first legs of the quarterfinals. That will be released late on Wednesday night, early on Thursday morning, depending on where you are in the world. And we'll be back after that next week as ever. Thank you so much for listening. If it is your first time, please do make sure you subscribe to this podcast and make sure you tuned in to all things Ranks FC going forward. We'd love to have you on board at the Rank Squad. Take it easy, gang. Peace.